Imagine a world
in which post-traumatic stress
no longer robs
from millions who suffer.
You don't want to get help because you're embarrassed.
That stigma of you can't talk to people is so true.
The experts, they forgot to tell me I can heal.
I don't want to live this trauma again. Right. And he goes, You don't have to. I said, What?
I just remember being able to stand by the water and look up at the sky and hear the noises. And I didn't think they were gunshots. I was like, those are Disney fireworks.
I don't even know what to imagine for myself now, my future, because I have one.
This is Life After PTSD.
Welcome to another episode of Life After PTSD. My name is Meghan Markle, and I am a guest host today. I can't believe they're letting me do this, but
we've been asking you over and over to come, and you won't ever come see us.
I know. I don't mind. It'll be fine. I'll be fine. It's fine.
Totally. You're going to be great.
100%.
Thanks. So we're here today to talk a little bit about your recent trip. So for those of you who don't know, the Life After PTSD crew recently took a trip to Lebanon to do some work. So we're here today to talk about it, just have a little bit of a debrief. So Carrie and Ed are going to describe their experience and a little bit of what they saw, what they did. And as Ed's spouse, we've talked about it, but I have some.
Yeah. What was your biggest takeaway when you heard him talking about it?
After the trip, just how amazing it was and just the lives that you touched, you know, just all things that you did that, you know, it just felt impossible going into it. It didn't feel like, you know, that was going to be able, you know.
That's true. Yeah. Teaching people in another language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's kind of like the tentacles or the ripples, you know, in the water, the after effects, like it's still affecting people and still moving beyond that first group that you met with, you know, that you trained, it's still touching people and, you know, and we're probably going to realize more effects even for who knows how long after this.
Yeah.
So my first question, I would like to know what were your priorities? Like, what did you want to accomplish?
To get there safely, right? And get home.
I think the number one thing was just let's get there. And we had a very, like, talking to our contact, Chris, over there, we had kind of a high level expectation of what he wanted, which was to train his workers in the messy process.
which it's funny, messy, of course, managing emotional states effectively does not translate in other languages. So it's kind of cool because they just called it the FAST protocol.
Yeah, or the FAST protocol.
Quick protocol. Yeah.
So the acronym MESSY didn't translate?
Right, correct. Because think it's a different language, right? And no language would it translate unless people...
Oh, right, I see what you're saying.
The acronym, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because we were talking about it. One of the trainers has translated to Spanish. And he said, yeah, in Spanish, it's something inappropriate or something that did. So we're like, we just need
like
to
the
have.
Acronym would mean, yeah. And it would be something inappropriate.
Yeah. And so I think we're going to have a little byline, you know, messy, the FAST protocol or the quick protocol.
That's interesting.
So I think getting, and also when you tell people you're going to Lebanon, they're like, Lebanon, why are you going to Lebanon? Yeah,
why?
And so that was always, and Chris, our contact there, said, yes, when you get home safely, be sure to tell people you came here and you felt safe, which we did.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there was, and I've told people this, like people at my other job, like that knew I was going or found out after the fact. You know, the first question is always why. And then, you know, it's the Middle East and just Lebanon, I think generally in the U.S. doesn't have a great
reputation,
yeah. You know, in the 80s, there was
Beirut
bombing that happened and killed some service members. So it just doesn't have a great connotation when you say the name. But I would say, even going, I did my best to go with a, if I'm being totally honest, I was a little nervous going, but after, you know, we got there and got settled in a little bit, I started to feel better. And like when Chris and his wife were like, yeah, like you can walk the streets here at any time of day or night. And
so we did.
Not an issue. So we did that one night. Driving is a little unnerving for someone coming from a very law.
U.S. driving is
very law heavy.
And there's no lights. There's no lights there. No stoplights. No traffic lights.
No stop signs.
No speed light. No speed limit. Wow. So
yeah,
I said our daughter would like it. She could just swerve in and out of traffic all she wants.
Yeah. So yeah, I think once we got there and got settled in a little bit, our mission, both literally and figuratively, became a little more clear to me, at least. I don't know how you felt, Carrie.
Well, I feel like we knew what we were doing. We just didn't know how successful it would be because we were going over there to train people. So the person that's over there is a therapist and he's also a pastor. And so he has, and he's opened a trauma clinic and he has trained people who are not necessarily therapists or, you know, trained
clinicians,
but they have a heart. They're intelligent people and have a heart for care, you know, they care for other people, but that doesn't mean that they're ready to work a protocol with trauma. But but when we got over there and the first day, you know, we talked to him, we're like, well, do you want to train? Do you want us to train? He's like, no, I'm just going to interpret whatever you say, which was kind of good because I thought, well, if it doesn't make sense, he'll probably just make it. That's what I said. You'll just fix it, right?
He said no. He said
no. I'm going to translate exactly what you say.
Oh, that's interesting.
But no, it was great. He would finish my sentences though. That was nice.
So, how much of it was kind of culturally dependent? Like, were there hangups? Were there things that they, you know, stopped you and said this does not?
So, I think to preface, leading up to this, Chris, our friend and translator, translated the protocol into Arabic and made it make sense in Arabic.
Oh, okay. Okay. So there's a little bit of work on the front end.
Right. Which was he said he basically translated as literal as possible. It's just if some words, you know, didn't make sense.
Yeah, there were some things that didn't necessarily translate precisely, so it had to be adjusted to make sense in that dialect and that culture.
Okay.
So
But the only thing he really, I think, and he also organized it a little bit where he put, you know, a few more break states or explanations of things up mm-hmm. front.
Okay.
But still it was the same length and it didn't take any longer. And it was, and when I had one of the people who spoke, you know, English and Arabic, but Arabic was their first language, mm-hmm. translate it to me. Like, what are you reading?
Okay, sure, yeah.
To see, and it's the same protocol. Yeah. So, and for those who haven't heard a previous, maybe this is their first podcast they're listening to, managing emotional states effectively is a protocol that we use for mainly trauma, but for other things,
broader term of trauma, right? Like our accepted definition of
and with other things like if you get anger, if you have an extra dose of anger or sadness or fear or hurt, those types of things which people don't necessarily associate with trauma, we can use this protocol for that. So when we went over there, the purpose was to teach this protocol because it will change someone's feelings about the traumatic event. So rather that we say it changes the way their brain interacts with the information. And so in Lebanon, there are quite a few Syrians and
just other
people. I mean, yeah,
people who needed
Kurdish people and people who have made a home in Lebanon, but they're traumatized because so much has happened in the Middle East in general. And so
including the Lebanese people.
Yeah. Including the Lebanese. Yeah. 100%. Yes.
So I think that's something to clarify. There is essentially a large group of very, what by any definition, you would consider traumatized, whether they were driven out of their homeland because of war, whether they're, you know, Lebanese and they're living, you know, in a hyperinflated economy and can't make ends meet, or there's no work, or, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why they're traumatized, but there just happens to be a high density of traumatized individuals there.
And so one of the unique factors in MESI is we can train a layperson. They don't have to be a therapist. And so here we've trained people who are pastors or firefighters or even just veterans who care about other veterans. And so this was a perfect protocol. Our friend over there actually happens to be a veteran who's a pastor and a counselor. Therapist, counselor. Yeah. He's also a veteran. And so it's just a lot of ways, a lot of factors where we could train workers, lay people, mm-hmm. to work with other lay people. And I thought it was amazing when we started training the first day, because you could see people light up like, oh, and Chris had laid the, I need to say, Chris definitely had done some foundation laying and really taught them about trauma and taught them some other protocols that he does that are related to.
Yeah, they had some other protocols they were using, but there were, my understanding is there were some issues.
Yeah, I mean, it helped some.
Getting people trained and different things like that. So he was actively looking for something else when he found us. And I think it's important to note here that, you know, his veteran status helped get us there.
Yeah,
so, definitely. So shout American out Legion. To the American Legion.
Oh, interesting.
For helping us.
And also Project Vet Relief.
Yeah.
Project Vet Relief and the American Legion, that was specifically the Winter Garden American Legion, that definitely helped.
Winter Garden, Florida.
Yeah.
That's amazing because, you know, a lot of times you hear about, you know, fundraisers for things, but this is a direct connection to those dollars. Those dollars went to, you know, well, to this direct program that facilitated your transportation, you know, the travel over there and then everything that's come out of it.
And one of the really exciting things was, so to summarize the whole thing, right, is we went over there, we trained seven people, well, kind of eight, but I mean, seven for sure, seven people completely. We trained seven people, and those seven people basically worked with 15 people before we left.
Okay.
So 2 days of training and then 2 days we observed them, and it was just half a day each day. So it wasn't even all day long.
Tell me, I kind of know, but for those who don't know, tell me a little bit, kind of a breakdown. You say 2 days, that sounds long.
Sounds long, really? That's so funny.
Well, like if you think of 2 8-hour days, that's kind of a lot but it's not.
It's not really. First of all, it's not 2 8-hour days. It was probably technically 4-hour days, but then we did other training, and there was another group there that was doing some other training as well, specifically with kids. And we did a little bit of that, but the protocol in and of itself is a two basically half day training. It's like 10 hours.
Oh, okay.
Basically.
Okay.
Five hours each day.
Yeah.
You know, approximately.
And, yeah. And then the next 2 days were also just half days as well. And they were working with individuals from the community.
Yeah, it was a clinic basically for four hours roughly.
Okay, so you trained seven. Those are,
and they treated,
what do you call them? The trainees.
They just call them practitioners.
Okay. Yeah. So these could be, like you said, lay people. So people who are not professional counselors.
A couple of them are really just college students who, quite intelligent college students,
but they can just be, it's a peer-to-peer. It could be,
peer-to-peer interaction.
Yeah. And I love that. I think that that's so important because really, you know, anyone that, you know, could get involved and help, you know, friends, people that are,
what was really fun is since we've been back home, one of the girls that I observed, well, it's funny. I say observed. We observed people in Arabic doing this.
Oh, right.
So it's really like
you're not even understanding what they're saying. No.
In fact, I Ed was better at not doing this, but at one point I was like, okay, where are you guys now in the protocol? Oh, okay. Like, I'm not sure where you are and how's it going? Like, because I mean, you could see a visual change, but for one of the girls, it got worse before it got better, which is okay. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing is I told someone the other day, I said, a traditional therapist would have gotten upset by that. Like, wait, mm-hmm. it's getting worse.
Yeah.
But that's normal. When we think about something bad, sometimes we will feel an increased negative, but then the brain reconsolidates it mm-hmm. and it was better.
Yeah.
But what was so beautiful about this is she stuck with the protocol because mm-hmm. that's what we told them to do.
Yeah.
And got through it. And it was amazing.
That's amazing. So
that particular girl though, since then has worked with a friend of hers who had some things going on. And she said he went from an 8 or a 9 to a 2, meaning like how negative they felt, mm-hmm. right?
So like a 0 to 10 scale.
Right. Mm-hmm. So 10 being mm-hmm. horrible, mm-hmm. went from an 8 to a 2 is
wow.
phenomenal, right? Yeah. She just learned it.
Yeah.
She's so it was so exciting to watch that.
That's amazing. What a
transformation
gift.
Happen.
Yeah. What a gift you can offer to, you know, to a friend or, you know, a loved one that.
Well, I mean, even
it's free and
because they don't have to share their story.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where, I mean, I've worked with people close to me who don't want to tell me about what is happening or what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't need to know all the details or even what they're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes them.
Yeah.
And we've done it on Zoom. We've done it, in lots of different
settings.
Yeah. Settings.
Environments.
Even groups. We've done groups. Although, I mean, we're careful not to just randomly do uh-huh, groups.
Sure.
But we have done groups.
I've done it on an airplane before.
Oh yeah.
That helped me.
That's so funny. Yeah.
So back to what you were saying before about working through some of the, you call it flooding, where you're kind of overcome with these emotions because you're thinking about the, you know, bad thing, whatever it is. But then getting through it, I've experienced that for sure.
Right. As a
practitioner, do you see that? Is that a normal?
Well, actually, most people don't flood.
Yeah. So our goal generally is.
You were one of the early ones we tested it on.
Yes.
Is to not have flooding. So.
Oh, okay.
Kind of built into the cake of the process, if you will.
The cake.
Yeah. I'm hungry, so I'm going to probably talk about food a lot and use a lot of food analogies. It is to prevent the person you're doing this with, the counselee, if you will, or the client, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, mm-hmm. you know, to prevent them from flooding.
So how do you define flooding? What are you looking for? What kind of, is it like a,
I mean,
you know, you have physical, something you
there
see?
There are many factors to it.
Okay.
So the early factors of flooding, this is so scientifically, we're talking about sympathetic activation or sympathetic response. So that is the fight, flight, or freeze mechanism of your body. And so there are physiological things that occur during this. They are typically the early onset things. And then...
Well, I mean, sometimes you'll even see like their throat.
Like yeah, like we...
Sometimes you can see it pulsating, like their pulse in their neck.
When you as a practitioner of any counseling protocol, I don't care what it is, and you're sitting in front of another person who you're asking to re-experience or re-engage a negative or potentially traumatic thing, you can watch that person go from, depending on whether they walk in thinking about it because they know they're coming to counseling mm-hmm. to do this, mm-hmm. which happens from time to time. And, you know, kind of as soon as you close the office mm-hmm. door, they're already, you see them starting to, you know, turn red or fight, you know, fight back tears.
Or maybe, as soon as they start talking about it, right? They get upset.
Right. And so that's probably someone who's already
on their way,
edging toward that activation, you know, activation level. And so there are things that we see with our clients, essentially nonverbal cues that we can see that are the person activating. And for us, we find that it's not really, you know, helpful. There is a time for crying. There is a time for moving through that. But often a lot of the time we're dealing with things that are years and years and years mm-hmm. old
and out of their control.
So that time is, it, that time has passed and it is in their control. And so we have to read.
They don't feel like that.
Right. So they don't feel like
that. If I was listening and I used to be of the other thought pattern of like, well, you have to feel to heal, right? You have to feel to heal. You have to, and you don't have to, I mean, maybe you have to feel a little bit, open up a little bit, but not maybe, really
you,
not.
You do. Like research is telling us, we know this, research is showing that in order to make a memory labile, so that is to make a memory, have the ability to reconsolidate that memory, so kind of reshuffle it and restore it into a different part of your brain, not in the emergency center. I mean, some research is saying seconds, like, so you don't have to,
well, I mean, let's say, hold on, seconds that you have to revisit or possibly be open or vulnerable, right, or you feel, you might feel something just for a moment.
And you probably do feel something. Well, you should be feeling something.
Well, I compare it to if you have an infection, right? It's kind of yuck, but if you had an infection, you can't treat it while it's still sealed shut. Mm-hmm. And if you had a wound that was infected and it's sealed over, mm-hmm, you have to at least prick it a little bit.
May need a drain.
But just barely. It doesn't have to be, just for a moment. And then we can basically almost, it's not numbing it, but kind of quell it for a little bit. Yeah. And then at the end, you can talk about it. I mean, that's what the amazing thing is. At the end, you should be able to talk about, like, once you're, maybe not that particular session, but you know, in a few days or next time you come back to the office, you should be able to talk about it as if like, this is something that happened to me, mm-hmm, and it's something that shaped my life, but it's not something that's controlling me now. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, it's like, amazing. Oh,
speaking of strokes, no, because we were talking about this yesterday and this will probably air right after the stroke episode. So I know, Megan, when you first called me, mm-hmm, and you told me about his stroke.
Yeah.
You were tearful.
Yes.
And you weren't exactly extremely comfortable with me being tearful with me necessarily.
No, not yet.
But you just couldn't. You were definitely.
I was still in shock.
Yeah. And you were activated.
Yeah.
Now you can talk about a stroke probably not feel, I mean, granted it's been time has passed and things like that. And he's okay. He's not, he didn't die. Mm-hmm. but I just, since this is Stroke Awareness Month, I'm just curious, how do you feel when you think about the stroke?
Well, I haven't done any massage.
I really thought about it. I was thinking on air
is not the greatest.
Yes, I thought about that actually.
Cause I,
that's probably something we should work on.
Yeah. That'd be great. I just, from my experience with Messi, just in, you know, I'm sure, like he was talking about, you know, when they walk in the office and you can see him starting to flood, you know, and I'm sure you've seen that in me plenty because I do not have a poker face. I don't hide anything.
Really?
Yeah. You can read it all over my face. You know exactly what I'm thinking. So I can relate to that for sure.
Super weird. Cause when I ask you if there's something wrong, you say, no, you're fine.
I'm sure.
I'm fine. Fine. Sorry. Freaking insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
Yeah. But and then I can also relate to that relief after having the Messi and you know,
after
I may not.
Messi, sorry.
Why is that funny?
Having a Messi.
No, it was good. I just was thinking like.
Just the session of Messi. I can, I may not be able to talk about it right then with you because I'm still kind of processing, but. It's a whole different,
your feeling about it changes.
Yeah. It's amazing. It just like turns it off in my brain that I should react in that way.
Or it puts it in the right area, right? Yeah. Because you don't really, it's not beneficial to react now because then you almost become illogical, right? Like when we're reacting,
Yes, exactly. My husband's agreeing with you.
We want you to stay married, so let's not, we should do this without him.
Just for the record, illogical. He did not say or make any.
Yeah, he did not respond
non-verbal.
To that. But I know it is illogical. It is irrational. It is not normal. It is not.
Well, okay, that's hold on. Just, it is normal to react. It's like, wait, this is not helpful. Mm. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
Now you know it's not normal. It's not normal or helpful, kind of
helpful.
Normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean you're abnormal because you react to something that happened horrible.
No, you know? No, I'm saying
that's all I wanted to say. The,
yeah. But like, I'm saying,
I mean, you
like,
might be abnormal in other ways, Megan, but
there's plenty.
No.
But no, I'm saying like, it doesn't make sense that I'm having such a strong reaction to something that happened when I was 3, you know, thinking back to the car seat incident.
Yeah. Episode, whatever that is, or whatever. Put that.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, the first session of Messy I did was, I have a strong reaction or had a strong reaction to being, in traffic in a car. And it related back to something when I was 3 years old.
We should take our Lebanon and test it out now.
That's what he said. Yeah. He said I would not be happy.
A little concerned said, about her ability to,
survive
a car ride there.
Yeah. I said seatbelt laws are necessary if I'm going to travel to a country.
So Lebanon's out. Lebanon.
Yeah. So it didn't make sense that I would have such a strong reaction.
For the record, I want to document that I invited you.
Thank you. Yes.
And you're declining.
Thank you. Yes. but I was having that reaction and it was in one session. I think it was 20 minutes of Messy. I was able to.
Well, even identify, because I don't think you knew why you even had that reaction.
No.
Yeah, that was interesting.
But that is my first memory.
Mm.
And I always knew that, but I didn't know that it had such a strong hold on me, you know, that it had such a important, I mean, obviously it was the first thing I remember.
It's so funny. You know, my first memory is of negative things was I was in a crib and I had just woken up from having my tonsils out. And the doctor or the nurse or somebody important said to my parents that I didn't know what I was talking about.
Oh.
And it's because I had just woken up from anesthesia and I was asking for fried chicken. So obviously.
That's totally normal.
And yeah. I remember thinking, I know that I want fried chicken.
You did. But that doesn't make sense. It's not what's best for you.
Obviously, it wouldn't be what's best for me. But what's funny is I think it's funny that I went into a field where I better, by golly, know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And
And when I think of you, I think of that you're very bright and you've got it under control. Like
maybe not, but you know,
well, you are.
But I do mean, I know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I may say it too much. I may talk too much about it.
Or too fast.
Actually, but I believe that I talked too fast because I talked so much and I wanted to explain what I was saying. So I learned to talk fast.
Yes.
Thinking in my younger brain well, if I say it really fast, it won't take them much time to listen to me. Mm. So yeah, I can remember that. I probably should Messy that, see if I can slow it down a little bit.
Well, but you mostly successfully slowed down your speech in Lebanon, because we talked about that.
Yes, it was amazing.
Well, and I've told Ed this, but when you're in a counseling session, it's like you turn something off, like or on, or I don't know what it is, but it you're just like
different.
You're different. Yeah, you're so effective and so comforting.
So maybe I should we should bring my husband in here. And I should pretend I'm in a counseling session.
Yes,
because I still remember one day he came home from work and. And I was like, telling him about all of the things, right? Uh-huh. And happy to see him. And he looks at me and he was backed up against the dishwasher. And I was like standing in front of him talking to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he looks down at me. He's, for those of you who don't know, taller. Looks down at me. He's like, can you just take a breath for a minute? Because I don't know that I feel like I can breathe. Like, I'm sorry.
But you're so controlled and measured in a session. It's interesting.
All right.
Well, moving back to Lebanon and landing the plane. We won't talk about the last plane, right? That's what we won't talk about, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll do some Messy on that.
So, but interesting thing, like what you guys were talking about, like in the process, is, you know, how people kind of describe it and like after the fact, and that like it's there, but it's, you know, it's not like this used to upset me and now it doesn't. But I think also we talk about a lot with like our clients and when we're training people is like that, you know, while science is unclear exactly how long it takes to actually consolidate a memory or stabilize it in memory is probably the more appropriate term. So like when we do this with someone, we often say, or I say every time, like, hey, you know, just for the next, like when you go home today, don't talk to anybody about like whatever this thing is, like just let it continue to reconcile.
That's interesting, because I remember you have told me that and I didn't know why. So that's why.
So I don't know, just anecdotally, I say like till after the next time you sleep. So whatever, whenever that is.
For you, it's 48 hours later.
Sometimes, just depends, you know.
Well, and most people do have a good night's sleep though after. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would sleep for.
Oh yeah, I don't mean that it keeps you up. I mean that it's because of your other job.
As a first responder, he may not.
That is so interesting, because I thought that I just was having a hard time processing, because I naturally kind of have a hard time with,
you think deeply about things,
communicating my feelings. Yes. Yeah. I'm a deep thinker. But that sounds like it's part of the process. It's kind of, you know, built in.
Well, it is interesting if something has been triggering you for that long, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you're like, I don't really feel triggered by that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about the one little girl that we worked with, and or I didn't work with, but one of the people that we trained, we mm-hmm. had just trained, and we watched her work with someone. And she was like, didn't want to be around people.
Mm-hmm.
And when we walked out of the room, it was kind of funny, because men in particular, yeah. she didn't want to be around. Yeah, and when we walked out of the room, we were across, the room we were in was across from the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Ed, who was walking out like at the same time
mm-hmm.
of the bathroom that we were walking out of.
Very small.
Yeah, very small yeah. space. So like you almost bump into each other, right?
Oh, we bumped into each other.
Yeah. It was like, whoa. I was like, oh, well. And so I apologized to her. I said, I'm so sorry. I didn't know he was going to be right there, because I had actually talked to her about just saying, being able to say hello to him or, uh-huh. you know, yeah. a man.
Sure.
Because some horrible things had happened, yeah. you know, with men.
For her.
And so. For her. And so, but so when I took her aside and apologized, I was like, I am so sorry. Are you okay? She looked at me. She was like, well, in Lebanese or in Arabic, it was translated to me that she said, oh no, I'm fine. I need to be around people. It's okay.
Oh,
it was
fine.
And prior to that
is so amazing.
And prior to that, she was very uncomfortable even in the room. I mean, it was obvious to anybody who walked in that she was uncomfortable being in a room of people. You know,
even if it was mixed gender, like men and women, mm-hmm. she just, and definitely not in a group of men.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of all the different facets, you know, we talked about trauma earlier, you know, it can be like a really big, horrible thing, or it can, you know, be as, you know, kind of minor as what my first, you know, being vomiting on myself in a car seat. That's so trivial, but it really affected me.
Oh yeah, let's bring it around to the last.
Sorry.
that's how I ended the very last car ride in Lebanon. But not because the car made me sick, but because I had gotten literally I went jumping over the person in front of me to get out so that I could I could not do that on anyone else before we got on the airplane.
Oh, I think you need like a trophy or something for all you went through. That so awful. No. I cannot imagine.
Two people.
Yeah,
so we had two people get the stomach bug while we were there. Yeah. So, and somehow your husband did not end up with it. I'm not really sure how, since he was staying in the room,
rooming with the person who kicked it off.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the young girl that you were talking about, which was an unplanned kind of,
because it was probably a little too intense for us,
but obviously probably. For, you know, just generally the most amazing story. Plus, it, you know, it was the child of someone that we were working
for. Right, but even the other, I even think of someone else, and then I know we need to land this plane, and we're going to get Chris on the podcast later. But even, I think of when one of the women looked at the man who was working with her and said, why do we wait to do this? Why are we just now doing this?
Really?
Right. She didn't realize like he had just learned it like the day before.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Cause they had done it. She's like, this is so easy. And what I said is, we need lots of tools, and who knows if this is working so well because you did something else sooner. I'm not going to say like, mm-hmm. this is the only type of therapy. Mm-hmm. You know, we need lots of things, mm-hmm. but it was really rewarding to hear her say that. Yeah, I was like, yes. Sure.
Yeah.
It's so gratifying to see that, something that we're training people in that they feel is helping them very quickly.
Beneficial.
And why would I do these other therapies, right? It was kind of
and
funny.
It's not just a quick win. It continues to reverberate in your life. It kind of continues to still help in the future.
Well, because think about the areas, like for some of these people, women that came in, you know, they've lost somebody in their lives, and that's what is constantly playing over in their mind. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to go through life, right?
Yeah.
So now if they're like, wait a minute, this happened, I had a wonderful, beautiful relationship, but I don't have that now because this person's on here, but I can continue mm-hmm. without them. I can raise my children. I can be strong. I can, you know, all mm-hmm. those things that were difficult for them to think about.
Consider before. Yeah.
Yeah. So the exciting thing is when we left there, I said to somebody, I was like, it's not like we just left with them with food that they're going to eat and it's going to be gone. Mm-hmm. I feel like we left them with like, we dug a well and showed them how to dig more wells. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Chris is going to train other people as they come in. We're going to go back probably in maybe 18 months. I don't know. At some point we'll probably go back there. And, I think it was, it felt like we've left them with a skill that they can mm-hmm. continue to use with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I remember sitting, in the first session, like when our people were doing, like their clinical practice. I was like in the corner and, Arab woman walks in. It was a younger male person.
This was interesting. Yes.
Doing it, which, you know, I don't.
The culturally we were concerned.
We just didn't like entering this. We didn't know a ton about how things interacted culturally there. So I just didn't know.
So
like
young
what
male
would or what,
working with a old, not older, but older.
Yeah. Older
than him.
Yeah. Much See? Older than, not much older, him. Older than him. You know, what would that, you know, is that not
and he just
okay?
learned it. He's like a college student. Yeah.
Right. You know, he's 19 and I would guess the woman was probably in her, you know, 30s. You know, roughly. And so she was very like I remember looking at her walk in, she like barely looked at me and sat down and just didn't crack a smile, like nothing, like no eye contact, and sat down and he started. And so for me, I like when we went through it during the training, I just picked up a couple words that I knew like generally where they were in the, like I knew when they were counting, I knew other points. Like I knew like where they were in the process. And, so he went through it and, you know, while we know it works, otherwise we wouldn't be putting it out there. Like it still hadn't really been hard tested in a totally different culture than the
different
United
culture,
States,
different
right?
language, everything.
Right. And so I was very nervous sitting there, and I was like, you know, making some notes and just some other things. And then he finished and
you could see her.
I
saw her afterwards.
Yeah.
I wasn't in there, but
just looked at me and smiled. And apparently she spoke a little bit of English because we talked. And then the person, the counselor that was working with her was one of our translators. So he was, you know, what she couldn't get in English, it was being translated. And she just was smiling ear to ear. And she's like, she said this through the translator, like, why didn't we do something that looks at positive stuff before? I've never looked at anything positive in my life.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you're surrounded by,
you know. Well, I mean, war-torn country and things, yeah. But they still have positive things. They have children. They have happiness. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, I mean, talk about the resilience that some of these people have is amazing.
But it's more negative than good. It's hard to
The other thing that happened, I don't know if you know this or not, but did you hear that the driver, the car, the guy that took us that one day in the car with, that he wants to do the process because he saw the little girls change.
Oh my goodness.
That's awesome.
I forgot. I don't think I had told you that. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, that's super amazing. Exciting.
And so he was like, what did she do? Like, what happened? Why is she happier?
Sure.
I was like, how cool is that?
Yeah. And that, again, that's that peer-to-peer. It's just a way to serve each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So the person we trained said, can I do that? We're like, yeah, are you sure? Absolutely. She asked Chris.
Oh, yeah.
If she could work with him. She's like, yeah.
That's incredible. So, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that you two are home safe, obviously. Sounds like an amazing trip.
Not sick anymore.
Yes. Yeah. You both...
No, I felt safe over there. I didn't feel,
that's great. That's really good. But,
even at the end of Ramadan,
but even just, you know, just traveling in general can, you know, it's a little nerve wracking.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but you know, you kind of just had the best of all the, everything that could go right did. Some grace on your side.
It was a way better experience.
Except for German immigration.
Yeah. Well, that'll be another episode.
That's another episode. Yeah. I think Carrie.
They asked me if I worked for the FBI.
Really?
Yeah, and they opened
Carrie and
my.
Carrie and I both have trauma from.
It was kind of
coming
both
in,
times coming,
coming
and going. They almost didn't let me out. Yeah, I thought that Phil and I were going to be stuck there in Germany.
Running a little behind for our flight, but getting to Lebanon.
Not because of us, because they stopped. Yeah. Stopped us. It was fun. Oh, anyway, yeah. Okay. But, so as we land the plane, any other thoughts or?
No, I think it was a fantastic, amazing experience. I hope we do it again, you know, and when we're
and
there.
And not just to Lebanon like, even.
But well, yeah. Did you know that we're going to go to Sudan? I mean, South Sudan.
Yeah, I heard.
Okay. Oh man, but, I wanted to tell her on the podcast. That would have been fun if you hadn't told her yet.
I have to prep, although you might prep her.
You might have been in trouble later.
Things, yeah. So
I need something to worry about, Carrie. Yeah. Come on.
You got rid of all of her other worries.
Exactly. Now she's, you know,
what would I do with my time?
But as always, I want to just thank everybody for listening to us today. I'm glad we could share this with you. It was an amazing experience. I think I can speak for Carrie on this, for us just get going to another country, helping another, really several countries worth of people, you know, different, slightly different cultures, but all Arabic speaking people. And I think we proved another step kind of in our journey of taking managing emotional states effectively to the masses, you know, and getting people help they need and making a force multiplier, you know, with training peers. And with that, don't forget, share this episode with
never know who needs to hear it.
Yeah, with your friends
and come back to listen to more adventures
with
Ed and Carrie.